Welcome in, podcast listeners. We got a loaded show for you as we break down the NBA draft lottery, Zion to New Orleans. What could the impact be? Also, we'll be diving into what happened last night between the Golden State Warriors and Portland Trailblazers, getting you ready for Raptors and Bucks. Three good guests, John Campbell with some gambling impact in hour one, hour two, Dan Wetzel, and then in hour three, Chris Mannix from SI. All that and more. Hope you enjoy. This is the Outkick the Coverage podcast on Fox Sports Radio.
Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Live from the Geico Outkick Studios, I thought a couple of things. One, we're going to get to the NBA draft here momentarily, but I thought last night's win by the Warriors was incredibly ominous for the idea that this is going to be a very interesting Western Conference Finals. The Warriors came out, Steph and Klay, and really dominated against the Portland Trailblazers. The defense that the Warriors put forward on Dame Lillard and I thought CJ McCollum was really, really good. I didn't think either of those guys got an easy bucket really the entire game. And on the flip side, I thought Klay and Steph got a ton of good looks. I don't know what the idea was from the Trailblazers on how to cover Steph, but he got more good looks in game one against the Trailblazers than I think he did almost in the entire series against the Houston Rockets. And I understand the idea of, hey, we're not going to let Steph break down our entire team, but how do you not run guys at Steph more frequently, especially when he beats you and just steps around a screen? It was wild how many good looks that he got. And I thought that was particularly the case when you look right now at the weapons that the Warriors have. Outside of Klay Thompson and Steph Curry, this is not a very explosive offensive team for the Golden State Warriors. So Steph went for 36, hit 9 threes, and Klay Thompson went for 26. Outside of that, Draymond Green got 12. Okay, you can live with that. Jurabinko got 9 points. I mean, there was really nothing else out there. And so I was really troubled by the way the Portland Trailblazers played defense. Now, maybe you can argue it was because they were coming off game 7 in Denver. They only had a couple of days to recover from that. And then they travel to the Bay Area and have a quick turnaround. We got game 2 coming up on Thursday, and obviously if the Trailblazers were able to win on the road against the Warriors, that would change things quite a bit. But without Kevin Durant and with fairly significant opportunity here, I think, for the Trailblazers as a result of that, this didn't look like a competitive series. It looked like to me the Warriors are going to win this thing in 5 games or less and may not even need to worry about bringing Kevin Durant back for this series. That's particularly the case if they win their first two. This feels like a Warriors win the first two, Trailblazers put everything they've got into one of the games, probably game 3, win that one, then the Warriors win game 4 and close it out in game 5. That's what it felt like to me watching the entirety of this first game. I didn't feel like the Warriors played that well, and I thought they were in a different class than the Portland Trailblazers. Now, maybe the Trailblazers will come back in game 2 and play really well. To be fair, the Trailblazers looked really bad in game 5 against the Denver Nuggets and then came back to win game 6 and game 7. But I think the Warriors are going to win this one in 5 or less. I would bet a lot of money based on what we saw in that performance. Now, we'll continue to unpack this. We got a loaded show for you. Let me give you an idea of where exactly we are headed. We have got in hour one, we'll get you some gambling impact with my guy John Campbell from Odd Shark. In hour two, we are going to be joined by Dan Wetzel, Yahoo Sports national columnist. And in hour three, Chris Mannix will swing by and join us. That's the setup as scheduled. Now, that's everything that went on in game one. I believe we have a sense for how much Steph was cooking. Here is a three he hit in the third quarter that effectively ended this game.
Curry takes a handoff from Klay Thompson. All is forgiven. He hits a three on the right sideline and gives Golden State a 17-point lead.
So Curry, I think, finally has found his mojo after not playing that well against the Rockets. He got hot in the second half on the road against Houston. He continued that hot streak, 9 for 15 from three against the Trailblazers in game one. But now let's pivot to what may end up being more of a significant impact here, which is what happened in the NBA draft lottery. I have long argued, and I maintain that it's true, that most fans have a really bad idea of how probability works. And so if you were a Knicks fan, or if you were a Cavs fan, or if you were a Suns fan, you were the three worst teams in the NBA last year. And the Knicks in particular, I think, felt like they had a higher chance of being the number one overall pick than they did. They each had a 14% chance to win the NBA draft lottery. That means there's an 86% chance that those teams were not going to win the NBA draft lottery. And so this idea that the expectation should be that they were going, the Knicks or the Cavs or the Suns were going to be able to get the number one pick, was a little bit of a crazy idea to begin with. And I think it probably was rooted in not realizing that the NBA had changed the odds of ending up with the number one pick to try to encourage teams not to tank. And so as a result, it's a pretty wild outcome. The New Orleans Pelicans get the number one overall pick. Zion is headed to the Big Easy. As if that weren't wild enough, the Memphis Grizzlies get the number two overall pick, meaning Ja Morant is likely headed to Memphis. Overall, that means that probably, I would argue, maybe the two least valuable franchises in the entirety of the NBA, the New Orleans Pelicans and the Memphis Grizzlies, end up with the two best players in a draft that is very, very top-heavy. And the result is pretty wild for New Orleans, where the NFC NFC title game error in officiating, coupled with Anthony Davis demanding a trade, suddenly the New Orleans area, Louisiana area sports fans get something breaking their way, because this is massive to get Zion. I think it probably means that Anthony Davis ends up rescinding his trade offer, because this could be monumental for the Pelicans. Let's listen to what David Griffin had to say about this scenario.
I mean, it's the same situation. We want to create an environment that players are attracted to. And we feel very strongly Anthony in totality will be attracted to what we can build and what we can offer. And it's the same for all players. We're gonna stand for something, and we hope that that recruits itself. You know, I don't believe, and I said this in Cleveland many times, I don't believe anything or anyone is untouchable in our business. There's a value for everything, right? And I think there's a situation in our league where most people try to shy away from big decisions because you can be wrong. That's not how our organization's going to operate. We're going to do what's best for us long term, whatever that looks like.
Now, they went to commercial break with four teams alive for the number one overall pick. The New York Knicks, the LA Lakers, the New Orleans Pelicans, and the Memphis Grizzlies. When Zion found out how the final two picks were going to go, you could see that he was crestfallen. He wanted to go to New York. He wanted to go to LA, where he could have theoretically made a lot more money. Now, if the Lakers had won this lottery, I'm not sure that Adam Silver would have ever been able to argue that the NBA draft lottery was entirely random. I mean, there would have just been so many people out there screaming, oh my God, can you believe the Lakers had whatever it was, a 2% chance, 1 in 50, to actually get the number one overall pick, and then it happened for them right after they were awful for a season, right when it looked like LeBron James was not going to be relevant in the Western Conference for the next couple of years of his career. Then, boom, the Lakers end up with the 4 pick. The Knicks fall to the 3rd pick. Not a total disaster, but certainly something different than they had been hoping for. Here is what it sounded like if you were not watching live.
The 2nd pick will be made by the Memphis Grizzlies. And that means that the number 1 pick in the 2019 NBA draft goes to the New Orleans Pelicans.
Grizzlies.
The New Orleans Pelicans ticket office celebrating and going crazy like they just won a national championship on the final shot of the game, or like their Toronto Raptor fans reacting after the ball bounces multiple times on the rim and then drops for them. There was a 6% chance that the New Orleans Pelicans were going to win this draft lottery. Now, we're going to unpack this when we come back from the next break, but this creates a ton of different potential moving parts here as we try and figure out where things are going from here. Now that, barring a total crazy move, it appears Zion will be a New Orleans Pelican, and that Ja Morant will be headed to the Memphis Grizzlies. It puts a ton of different moves in play, and I think is really pretty good for the NBA overall in terms of the legitimacy of the draft lottery. Now, there are tons of people out there who believe the draft lottery is fixed. I got to tell you, you're crazy, all right? If the draft lottery was fixed, and it was determined that the draft lottery was fixed, then Adam Silver and whoever else was involved in it in the NBA would go to prison. That would be fraud. They would go to prison for years and years. They would forfeit millions of dollars. I don't believe there's any way that the NBA draft lottery is rigged. Here's what I would say. Why don't they have the draft lottery live on television itself? Actually show us the ping pong balls happen. Is that a crazy idea to eliminate the idea that there is some sort of fakery going on? Just put like they do. Don't they do that with the lottery for a lot of places where the ping pong balls come up and they show you exactly which numbers win? Why don't they do that for the NBA draft lottery? I understand there's drama in the way they unveil who is going to be picking, but why not just go ahead and do it live? Show us the draft ping pong. You know, they have this every year. They have a huge number of media members who get to be in the secret room with the NBA, and they take away their cell phones, and they all observe it happen in real time, so there's no drama associated with it being able to be faked. Why don't they do that just live on television? I think that would be a lot more interesting to see the ping pong balls themselves. But I think you definitely have to give credit to the NBA because the result was no team that tanked ended up being rewarded for tanking. And two franchises that are really outside of the mainstream in terms of the attention they get on a game-by-game basis, the Pelicans and the Grizzlies, end up with the two best players theoretically available in this draft. We will break down all of the impact of this move.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Welcome back, Geico Outkick Studios. Two of the least relevant historically franchises in the entirety of the NBA, the New Orleans Pelicans and the Memphis Grizzlies, get the top two picks. What does this mean going forward in the NBA? Let's break this down a little bit. First of all, I would think that there is going to be a ton of drama surrounding what the Pelicans decide to do. If you are Anthony Davis now and you're looking at the talent surrounding you with the Pelicans, I think you probably don't you want to wait and see how good Zion is before you try and demand a trade? Now, again, if you're going back and you're being reasonable and you are Anthony Davis, don't you want to get Zion into camp and actually see for yourself how good he can be if you're Anthony Davis because now if I'm him, being honest, I want to play out my final year in New Orleans, see how good Zion might be, and then allow myself to make a decision to go wherever I want in the NBA. Maybe that means I decide to stay with the New Orleans Pelicans. Maybe it means that I go elsewhere, but why be traded for 1 year when you're now just 1 year away from free agency? And let's say that Zion Williamson comes in and catches the league on fire. It's possible that New Orleans is the best destination for Anthony Davis. At a minimum, I want to play all the way up until the NBA trade deadline because I actually want to see whether or not New Orleans has finally gotten lucky and is able to put together a team that can contend for championship in the next couple of years. That's my thoughts. That's the rational thought if you are Anthony Davis. Now, he may still demand a trade, and if so, the Pelicans can be even more discerning in what they decide to do because they shouldn't feel any pressure at all now that they've got Zion theoretically coming to New Orleans. And this is assuming, by the way, that Zion doesn't go to war with his representation and start saying, hey, I don't want to play in New Orleans. I'm willing to go back and stay at Duke for another year if the Pelicans draft me, which would turn into a huge mess. I don't think that will happen because the economics here are pretty straightforward. You want to get into your rookie contract as quickly as you can if you are an NBA player because it's in that second deal that you really start to make outlandish money. So the smart play is for Zion, even if he's unhappy to go to New Orleans, suck it up, play under your rookie deal, get it done as quickly as you can, and then hit free agency and prove, if you're a great player, that you can go anywhere at that point in time and play in any market in the country that you desire. So I think immediately this raises a lot of questions about Anthony Davis, and we'll see whether the Celtics are still willing to put together a package, potentially including Jason Tatum. We'll see whether the Lakers decide to put that number four pick, maybe with a couple of their young guys, and try to ship it down to New Orleans in exchange for Anthony Davis. But if I'm the Pelicans, I'm not willing to move very quickly now on Anthony Davis. And the pitch that I'm going to make to him is, hey, man, I understand you've been upset, but we just got the lottery. We just won the lottery, literally. And we've now got one of the biggest, most transcendent stars imaginable potentially coming to play with you for at least 1 year and multiple years if you're willing to re-sign. Why don't you just wait, table your trade demand, come back in October, come back in training camp. Let's find out exactly what might be possible with you paired up with Zion. I think that makes the most sense. For the Grizzlies, I think this puts Mike Conley on the trade block almost immediately because you have to assume that they're going to go with Ja Morant. They're going to be a young team. They're going to hand him the reins to the Grizzly franchise. Who is interested in grabbing Mike Conley? How much trade value does he have? They almost moved him at the end of last season. Instead, nobody really stepped up to the plate. I would think you go ahead and start shopping Mike Conley in the offseason. Not to say you can't bring him back, but he's a high salary guy. I would think there's a move to be made to trade Mike Conley and allow that situation to be cleared up for Ja Morant. If you're the Knicks, I don't think you have to be that panicked, honestly. Again, this comes back to basic probability. There was an 86% chance you were not going to get the number one overall pick. So the fact that you did not, I don't think really changes anything necessarily in terms of who you should be pursuing in order to try to get Kevin Durant, maybe to try to get Kyrie Irving. You got the space for two big free agents. The fear for the Knicks is that Kevin Durant ends up getting recruited by the Golden State Warriors. They're clearly trying to pitch him on staying for another year or several years and re-upping again for another 3 or 4 year contract. And I think that's got to be the fear if you are the Knicks. Now, I know Colin Cowherd said yesterday he's heard that the Knicks and Kevin Durant is a done deal. I would just hit the pause button on that in general because Kevin Durant has shown himself to be susceptible to pitch meetings. Remember what happened when the Hampton Five got together and they went out to the Hamptons and all got into the room with Kevin Durant and made the pitch on why he should come to the Warriors. That pitch seems to have really worked for him, and as a result, the Warriors ended up keeping and adding all of their talent and bringing in Kevin Durant too. I would just be a little bit nervous if I am the Knicks, and I'm assuming that this is the result of the draft, and it doesn't matter because we've still got Kevin Durant and maybe Kyrie Irving and somebody else. I'd just be nervous because Durant, again, if the Warriors win this title and Durant comes back from that calf injury and plays well in the finals or even at the end of this series against the Portland Trailblazers as well, when he really looks at it, is he going to say, wait, what's better for my career? Potentially winning 5 or 6 titles in a row with the Golden State Warriors in Silicon Valley, where I have tons of off-the-court related business venture opportunities, or going all the way across the country to New York, going to a dysfunctional Knicks franchise and trying to put them in the mix to win a championship. I think the play is for Kevin Durant to stay with the Warriors. I really do. Let's go ahead and bring in Eddie Garcia. Eddie, you're our hockey expert. This effectively means the Bruins are headed to the Stanley Cup final, right?
Pretty much, yes. The Hurricanes had a lot of great chances in the first period of that game. They hadn't lost a home playoff game yet in the postseason. They threw everything they could at Tuukka Rask. He would not allow a goal. And then Boston was able to get the lead and take the 3-0 series lead. So the Bruins are looking very strong. And Carolina, that was their best shot to get back in the series. And they could not convert 0-for-5 on the power play. They had their chances. They couldn't get it done.
We'll see what happens in the Bucks-Raptors series in the Eastern Conference. But I feel like the Bucks are going to win it pretty easily too. And we'll also see what happens in the Blues and the Sharks series. But there's a little bit of nervousness out there for me that we're not going to get any great Eastern or Western Conference finals in the NBA or the NHL coming down the stretch here. That's certainly the way I feel after watching what happened last night with the Warriors and with the Trailblazers. Let me bring in the crew. Your big takeaway, I think the draft by far is a much bigger story than what we saw happen in Game 1 between the Warriors and the Trailblazers. So your big takeaway, Danny G, from the draft lottery as we spin the results forward is what?
It was nice to see a couple of teams in the top four that weren't tanking. Obviously, the new system that you spent a lot of time covering yesterday morning was pretty effective. And what's up with Twitter? How come everybody has to be a conspiracy theorist on Twitter? It's rigged. Oh, you know the NBA wanted it like this. They're doing it like that. Dude, if the NBA was rigging things, they wouldn't have given the Pelicans the number one overall pick. You're right about the look on Zion's face. And David Griffin holding that creepy 54-year-old Black Magic doll in his hand was a little odd. That's the other takeaway I had was, have you ever met a Pelicans fan in real life, in person? Do you know any Pelicans fans?
Well, I mean, I think that's why. I mean, the Pelicans and the Grizzlies are probably the two franchises that struggle the most. I mean, right? I mean, New Orleans is not a big market.
Yeah, it just seems, though, like New Orleans is such a football town that that even their residents, I saw a lot of New Orleans natives online last night talking about how they would much rather have that call that cost you and Cousin Sal all that money, rather than 3 number one picks back-to-back-to-back in the NBA lotto.
New Orleans is an awesome town, but it really is a football-mad city, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they love LSU, and they love the Saints, and that's reflected in the television ratings everywhere else. Memphis is a basketball-crazed city. I mean, basketball is the lifeblood of Memphis very often, so that's a little bit different. But you're right. I mean, for everybody out there who's a conspiracy theorist, if the NBA were rigging this, and I mentioned it yesterday, the Lakers would have gotten one of the top two picks and the Knicks would have gotten one of the top two picks, because the best thing that could happen to the NBA is, I think, Zion to either L.A. or New York and Ja Morant to the other city. That's the best thing that could happen. From a pure attention perspective, the worst thing that could have happened is the Pelicans and the Grizzlies, New Orleans and Memphis, get the two best players. I mean, that's the reality. So anybody out there who's like, oh, this is fixed, if it's fixed, then the NBA probably picked the worst possible outcome of the draft lottery to end up happening. And again, it's not fixed because anybody who was involved in fixing the NBA draft lottery would be facing years in prison and the loss of millions of dollars. It's not worth it to anybody in a position of power in the NBA. It just literally doesn't matter enough.
Who's going to run out and grab a Pelicans jersey? First of all, it's the worst mascot in the NBA, probably. Couldn't they have come up with a better team name? I mean, a couple of times in the show yesterday, you still called them the New Orleans Hornets.
Yeah.
It just proves my point about how they're just not a relevant franchise. Now, maybe Zion can turn that around. But just the simple fact that nobody wants to play there, and even with Zion going there, none of us would say, man, I can't wait to see Zion play in New Orleans, you know, unless he was a football player.
Stars make teams, and I think when you get to New Orleans, when Zion gets there, he'll be like, man, this is an awesome city. I really do think that he will. And it will be intriguing to see how much people buy in with the Pelicans. I think it's been hard for people to buy in because you got guys like Anthony Davis saying, hey, trade me. I don't want to be here. And I think the more intriguing question in the result of the NBA draft lottery is how is Anthony Davis going to respond? Dub, your big takeaway.
Well, I had a few big takeaways from last night. First of all, that game just felt like a regular season game.
It was just boring. It was, again, this is the big issue I think that we're going to see. I think most people, myself included, feel like Rockets-Warriors was the NBA Finals, that those were the two best teams. Now, maybe the Raptors or the Bucks are going to be able to give, presumably, the Warriors a really good run in the NBA Finals. But right now, I feel like it's sort of it's like the Pro Bowl. We just had the Super Bowl, or we're about to have the Super Bowl, and now we got the Pro Bowl going on, and I don't care. Because I know that the Super Bowl is where the championship is going to be decided, and I feel like we already had the Super Bowl in the NBA. So I'm with you. It just didn't feel like a high-end matchup in the Western Conference. Even the crowd didn't seem all that much into it at the start, as if they already felt like, hey, yeah, we're ready for the NBA Finals.
Yeah, and then again, to echo Danny G's point, the whole conspiracy theorist, although they should have already been dead, considering the Cavs got 3 number one picks in 4 years, the Magic got back-to-back number one picks, and the Spurs got Tim Duncan. This on top of that, with New Orleans and Memphis getting 1-2, I mean, the conspiracy theorists are officially dead, even though they already should have been.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's any doubt at all. How do you think Anthony Davis is going to react this morning as he wakes up and starts to survey the landscape?
It's tough, man, because, I mean, Zion is obviously a transcendent player, but how much is he really going to make an impact in his first couple years? I'm not sure Anthony Davis wants to spend any more time in New Orleans because they were unable to take advantage of him being there. And now I kind of felt bad for Zion in a way because I feel like this has the opportunity to be the whole Anthony Davis situation, just run back to the beginning.
Yeah, we'll see what ends up happening there in terms of, to me, you want to wait and see how good Zion's going to be if you're Anthony Davis, because you may have an opportunity to play with a like truly transcendent player who's coming into his own over the next couple of years, and it might change your opinion about what's capable of being done in New Orleans, not to mention how Kevin Durant makes this decision. Does he go back east, which would potentially upset the balance of power as well? There's a lot of different moving parts on this chessboard. Eddie Garcia, any big takeaway from you?
You know, I'm not a huge NBA fan, but I have to be honest, and I'm not sure I can really explain why, but when I found out that the Pelicans had won the draft lottery, I just felt disappointed. I mean, I know there were, I mean, look, Phoenix was in there, Cleveland. I mean, if Zion goes to any of those places, I'm not exactly excited about that either. But for some reason, when I found out it was New Orleans, I just thought, oh, that's too bad for the NBA.
Yeah. I mean, again, I think if you're a rigged draft lottery guy, this result this year totally killed it. Roberto, your thoughts?
The lottery was way better than that game, man.
Yeah.
The fact that the Blazers couldn't take advantage of Kevin Durant not being there is disappointing because It's going to be a short series, I think.
Yeah, I would love to be wrong because, I look, with Lock It In and with this show, I want as many good games as there are possible to talk about, especially as we come closer to the summer when it's like a sports wasteland in terms of everybody caring by and large. And I couldn't even make an argument that this series is going to go very far based on what I saw in game one. It feels like five games or less, unless I think this is a must-win game on Thursday night in the Bay Area for the Portland Trailblazers. They lose that one and go down 2-0, it's effectively over. And to get run by over 20 points without Kevin Durant even playing, it doesn't bode well for the Trailblazers going forward. All right, when we come back, John Campbell, how about the odds impact of the NBA draft lottery? The Grizz and the Pelicans, massive moves in terms of their odds to contend for the championship. We'll talk about that. We'll also get you ready. By the way, you shocked about this? The PGA Championship is this weekend. Tomorrow, the PGA Championship starts in golf. A lot of you stunned by that. This is the first year they've ever played it in May. We'll talk about that, and we'll talk about the NHL, everything else going on in the world of gambling with my guy, John Campbell. Where are the best bets? What's the best thing to be paying attention to? That's next. This is Outkick on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick, the coverage with Clay Travis, weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Welcome back, Geico Outkick Studios. We are joined now by John Campbell. He is at Oddshark. He's at Johnny Oddshark on Twitter. Let's go ahead and bring him in here. What's shaking in the world of NBA draft lottery impact on the odds? I was blown away by this. Pelicans go from, at least in one place I saw, 300-1 to 25-1. That seems like an overreaction. You ever seen anything like this before?
Not like that for one draft pick. That's insane. That's a huge move here. And I've never seen anything like it. And that's just the impact that Zion has on basketball lines.
And also it must mean that odds makers believe that Anthony Davis may be more likely to stay in New Orleans now too for the entire season. That has to be what that prognostication is telling us, in addition to maybe it being a little bit of a frothy reaction, overreaction on Zion. I think that, but also Ja Morant, I saw the Memphis Grizzlies went from 300-1 to 100-1. So if you're a Grizzlies fan, that's a pretty substantial impact based on one pick as well.
Yeah, for sure. And one player really shouldn't move lines like that, but it's handicapping the public perception as well. And bettors are going to pile on these teams now. And that's really what they're handicapping, because one guy just should not be doing this.
All right, speaking of one guy, Steph Curry, they couldn't cover him. 9-for-15 from three. The Portland Trailblazer defense looked pathetic. I feel like this Warrior series against the Trailblazers is effectively over after what I saw in game one. Are the odds markets starting to react as well? What have you seen based on having now seen these two teams on the court together?
Yeah, it's tough to say the series is over after one, but the Warriors are just such a better shooting team than Portland, and I think that showed last night. And the Warriors were -550 favorites to win the series to start, and then after last night they go up to -900. So that's a big shift for just one game here, and certainly oddsmakers convinced that this series is over by that number. To put that into perspective, those are the odds that the Boston Bruins were favored by to win their series after going up two games. So Warriors are up one game and facing about the same odds that other teams face after two games going up 2-0.
How would you play from a gambling perspective? Because there's a lot of people out there that want to gamble on the Western Conference Finals. There'll be a lot of eyeballs on it, even if it's not going to be a very competitive series. How would you play it from a gambling perspective?
Game to game right now, if these spreads are where they are, last night's spread was 7.5, and I said on my show yesterday, like, do not be scared by this big number. So if these numbers are staying around there, I think we're fine to take Golden State. Golden State was a horrendous bet all year long, so this line sort of feels big when we get to this stage. But don't be afraid of that. The other thing is that the Warriors play really well without Kevin Durant. They're now 31-4 and 22-10-3 against the spread without Durant when Curry is in the lineup. So these guys are more than comfortable without Durant. I think he's the best player on the team, but when he's not there, the Warriors play great, and I think it's a very comfortable situation for them.
All right, what about tonight's game, Eastern Conference? You're a Canadian. The Raptors are Canada's team. How do you play tonight's game?
Well, tonight I'm on the Bucks tonight, and I just think, again, this one might feel big for an Eastern Conference Finals game one, the Bucks favored by 6, but I will be shocked if the Raptors are able to overcome the emotional letdown that I think is going to happen here tonight. I mean, this country just went bananas after game 7, the tweets and the gifts and the celebrations just across the country. It's been insane. And the first buzzer beater in a game 7 to clinch a series that we've ever seen. I just think the emotional factor is going to be way too much. I think the Bucks are better anyway. I think the Raptors will make this a tough series as it goes on, but I'm feeling like they might get blown out tonight.
How do you play the PGA quickly? That's starting tomorrow. I think it's going to catch a lot of people by surprise.
Yeah, I think so. And I look for accuracy off the tee and guys who hit green. So Brooks Koepka is right in there. Matt Kuchar probably has the best statistics that way. He's an accurate driver and hits lots of greens. He's 50-1. I think Brooks Koepka is going to win. Tiger leads the tour in greens and regulation accuracy. He's 11-1. So I think you go with those guys. I think we're going to see one of the big boys win it, though. This is a very tough course.
Outstanding stuff, as always, John Campbell, at Johnny Oddshark. You can follow him there on Twitter. When we come back, diving back into the NBA draft lottery and the implications that are going to unspool from that, who is the biggest winner of all outside of the Pelicans and of the Grizzlies? I will tell you, this is Outkick the Coverage. Encourage you to download the podcast. We're also going to be joined in an hour or two by Dan Wetzel, who had a big column about the reaction down in the Big Easy over adding Zion on Fox Sports Radio.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Live from the Geico Outkick Studios. Last night, we had, unfortunately, I think the series that a lot of us worried we might have. The Warriors came out. It didn't really feel electric. It didn't feel exciting. It felt like a pretty solid beatdown in game one. I defy anyone out there who watched game one between the Warriors and the Trailblazers to say anything other than this feels like a 5 games or less series. We'll see what happens tomorrow. But if the Trailblazers don't win on the road in game two, this thing is effectively over. And I don't think there's going to be any major buy-in from people who want there to be an entertaining Eastern and Western Conference final. You can at least take the West off the board. Now, we'll see what happens tonight. The Milwaukee Bucks have been flawless so far in the playoffs. 8-1 overall, 8-1 against the spread. Bad performance in game one against the Celtics in their last series. Otherwise, they've played outstanding. I think what we're going to see is a repeat of what we saw last night, which is the team that won game 7 2 days ago is going to be tired 3 days ago now, at least for the Raptors. It's going to be difficult for them to be up on the same level. The Bucks have been sitting around biding their time forever, and now they get the opportunity to come out and play in a Eastern Conference final as they chase their first championship since 1971. I think the Bucks are going to run all over the Raptors, especially when you consider how bad the Raptors have tended to be in the first games overall in playoff series. I don't think this is going to be very close. And so I think the Bucks are going to take control early in game one tonight, but I'm more troubled by the Trailblazers against the Warriors. This did not feel like a series that it's worth investing very much time or energy in. Now, on the flip side, by far, I think the thing that people cared about more last night, and I wish I'd put this poll up yesterday, was, are you more interested in the NBA draft lottery or Warriors against the Pelicans? Unlike the Warriors, who I think most people kind of assumed were going to dominate in that series, nobody foresaw what ended up happening in the NBA draft lottery. The Pelicans down in New Orleans get the number 1 overall pick. The Memphis Grizzlies get the 2. Knicks third, and the Lakers the fourth. For anybody out there that's arguing that this is a rigged process, this effectively puts that to bed because these are probably the two teams that the NBA would have least preferred end up with the number one and the number two picks, especially when it came down to a final four of New Orleans, Memphis, LA, and New York. If the NBA had had its choice, there's a 100% chance they would have preferred Zion in New York or LA. There's a 100% chance they would have preferred Ja Morant in either New York or LA. Now, if you live in New Orleans or you live in Memphis, you should be celebrating over winning the draft lottery. But I don't want to rain on your parade completely, but I do want to share this. Since the draft lottery began in 1985 with Patrick Ewing, who, by the way, the Knicks brought in as a good luck charm, since 1985, that's a long time, right? Going all the way back to 1985, that's 34 years of the draft lottery. Only four players drafted number one overall have actually won championships with the team that drafted them number one overall. And it's taken at least two number one picks in both of those scenarios. David Robinson and Tim Duncan both to the Spurs. And meanwhile, LeBron James, who left and then came back, so I'm not 100% sure you can even count that, but LeBron leaves and comes back, plus Kyrie Irving. Otherwise, no number one pick has ever won the NBA championship with the team that took him number one overall. So that's 34 years now of data, and it's only happened four times out of those 34 years that the number one overall pick has ended up winning a championship with the team that drafted him number one. Now, to be fair, Zion is a transcendent talent, but it's amazing if you watch that last night, how quickly they got him out of that arena and that scenario as soon as it became clear that New Orleans had the number one overall pick. I don't know if it's too soon to think about it, but we have seen this happen before, certainly in Major League Baseball. It happens all the time in the NFL where a guy says, you know what, I'm not playing for the team that has the rights to draft me. We've seen this happen a lot in the NFL. Is there any way Zion could say, you know what, I'm not playing for the New Orleans Pelicans, I'll go back? Remember, I believe he still has the right to withdraw from the NBA draft and go back to Duke for another year. Now, that would be crazy because you want to get that first contract out of the way, even if you're not happy with the team that drafts you. So I think what's more likely, if he were going to raise a stir, is could we get a John Elway-type situation back in the day? Could we get an Eli Manning-type situation back in the day where the team's organization that surrounds this guy, Zion's team, comes out and says, guess what? He's not going to play for New Orleans, and basically calls the bluff of the Pelicans if they don't trade the number one overall pick. Now, this would be a double body blow to the Pelicans because already Anthony Davis has demanded a trade. If Zion Williamson demanded a trade before he was even drafted by the Pelicans, I'm not sure how New Orleans keeps an NBA franchise. I'm not trying to hit the alarm bell, but I mean, in all honesty, if you've got Anthony Davis, who's a great player, and he refuses to play for your team and demands a trade, and then you think that you've won the lottery. I think we have the audio. Here's the audio of the number one pick coming down when they announce Memphis and the celebration starts in New Orleans, and then their season ticket office. Listen to this. Listen to this celebration in New Orleans.
The second pick will be made by the Memphis Grizzlies. Oh. And that means that the number one pick in the 2019 NBA draft goes to the New Orleans Pelicans.
That is pandemonium in the office of the New Orleans Pelicans. Now, in theory, the Pelicans can draft Zion Williamson, and they can have him for 5 years, effectively, before they have to allow him to hit free agency. That's a long time to be able to persuade him that New Orleans is the place you need to be. I love the city of New Orleans. I think that a lot of people who are hearing when the Pelicans get the number one overall pick think about New Orleans, haven't spent time there, don't know how great of a place it is to live. But it is a small market. And for Zion Williamson, he wanted to make all of that off the field, off the court related money. And New Orleans puts a little bit of a crimp in that possibility. Now, I would also argue that in this day and age, the star factor follows the player more than it follows the team. So if Zion is a really good transcendent talent, like many of us believe that he is, then I think all of the attention will follow him no matter where he goes because of the star-like system in the NBA and also because of the social media outreach and everything else. Zion's coming into the league already a star. DeAndre Ayton went to Phoenix. We talked about this. Zion getting to play for the Duke Blue Devils. Duke drew more viewers for each of its games than anybody did in the NBA who was a top pick last year. Like, if you compare the number of people who watched Zion play for Duke versus the number of people who watched DeAndre Ayton play for the Phoenix Suns last year, Zion became a much bigger star. This is going to put the Pelicans on the map in a way that they've never been before. Now, here is the challenge for Anthony Davis. The year before he demands a trade, the Pelicans go out and they win a series in the NBA playoffs and they win a game against the Golden State Warriors. So they were in the mix potentially to be a pretty decent team. And then the wheels came off the franchise this year. If Zion's as good as many of us anticipate he could be, doesn't Anthony Davis have to wait and see how good this Pelicans team could be with him paired with Zion? The only nervousness I have here, again, if I'm a Pelicans fan or if I'm following this story, is we haven't seen it. I think I'm correct in this. We've never seen anybody in the NBA say, hey, I'm refusing to play for this team. If you draft me, I will sit out. Did Kobe really refuse to play for Charlotte? Didn't Steve Francis maybe refuse to play for Vancouver back in the day? Maybe vaguely. Based on how uncomfortable Zion looked when the Pelicans got the number one overall pick and he realized he was headed theoretically to New Orleans for 5 years, is it possible that his group, his guys, the management team that he has, could put out word, hey, I won't play, whatever it might be, in order to try to force the Pelicans to make a trade? That's the only thing that would make me nervous if I'm a New Orleans Pelican fan. We'll talk about this with Dan Wetzel, see whether he buys into this being a fear at all. Should be a fascinating discussion. 877-996-6369 is the phone number if anybody wants to weigh in on that. I don't know why I gave out the number, because we're probably not going to take any calls at minimum until the final segment of the hour. But maybe we'll take some calls from people down in New Orleans who want to react to that in the final segment of the hour. But up next, it's Dan Wetzel. First, I want to bring in the crew and ask them this question. Are you nervous at all that Zion might go Eli Manning, that he might go John Elway back in the day, and refuse to play for the Pelicans? Any possibility of that, Danny G?
I mean, there's always the possibility. He doesn't seem like that sort of kid. When they were interviewing him prior to the draft lotto, I mean, maybe he was just saying all of the right things.
Eddie Garcia, you're a hockey guy. Can you remember a hockey team ever, a player, because I'm not an expert in the draft in hockey, has a number one presumptive pick ever tried to exert influence like that in hockey, like we've seen?
Yes, Eric Lindros did it. He was drafted by the Quebec Nordiques and refused to sign with them and got traded to the Philadelphia Flyers.
Wow. So, I mean, that's happened in hockey. It's obviously happened in the NFL. Baseball is a little bit different because guys have more flexibility. A lot of times when you're in high school, you can threaten, hey, you know what, I'll go on to college or whatever it's going to be. So that's kind of part of the gamesmanship of baseball. But you can't remember this ever happening really in a way in the NBA, right?
In the NBA, no, I do not remember that happening. But would I be shocked by it? I would not be shocked by it. I know Zion has always said, and maybe this is something he's always kind of kept in his pocket as a possible option, how much he loved Duke, and oh, you know, he didn't really want to leave school. And I don't know if it's going to happen or not. I wouldn't be shocked, though, if it did.
Can you imagine the gut punch to New Orleans after Anthony Davis already says, I want to leave, I'm demanding that I want to leave, and then you get the number one overall pick, and we just heard the celebration?
You were going to say, we saw the ticket sale people celebrating. Can you imagine their faces?
They're probably selling a lot of season tickets this morning, I would bet, for people out there. They're making calls and sending emails based on having the number one overall pick and the expectation being Zion comes. Imagine if you bought those tickets and then Zion doesn't come and they also trade Anthony Davis. Like, you'd want your money back, right? So this is intriguing, to be sure. We will discuss this with Dan Wetzel. What does he think happens? Yahoo Sports national columnist wrote last night about Zion potentially to the Big Easy. And look, I say this as a guy who absolutely loves New Orleans. I think it's a fun place. I would think of a lot of NBA cities. I would think it's a great place to go. And certainly look as far north as Milwaukee. Look at what happened with Giannis. I don't think there are a lot of people out there who are like, man, I can't wait to go play basketball in Milwaukee. Yet he seems to have really fallen in love with that city. And the expectation is that he's potentially going to sign a long-term extension with the Milwaukee Bucks. So all you have to do if you are Zion is look up to Milwaukee and say, you know what, if you had to choose between being in Milwaukee or New Orleans, I don't think there are that many people that would pick Milwaukee that are listening to us right now who have been to both cities. So I think New Orleans underrated. Certainly it's an underrated market in general for basketball, but look at how they have embraced the Saints. If you can win in New Orleans, I think the fans will show up and support you in a big way. We'll talk about this next. This is Outkick the Coverage on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Rough stuff there if you're Zion listening to this song. Jay-Z, New York, New York, bringing us back. Tear running down Zion's cheek here in the Geico Outkick Studios. Dan Wetzel, you wrote about Zion to New Orleans. We were just having this conversation. What do you think the chances are, if you were trying to set odds right now, that Zion could pull a John Elway, that he could pull an Eric Lindros, that he could pull an Eli Manning and say, hey, I don't want to go to New Orleans. We haven't ever seen it in the NBA. Could it happen here, or do you think that's far-fetched?
I think that's far-fetched. I think trying that in the NBA would be that would just be devastating to his that wouldn't go over well.
Look, I mean, I think it would be a mess. There's no doubt. And New Orleans would be like, man, we might as well just move the franchise because we got Anthony Davis demanding a trade. We win the number one overall pick and a guy won't come play for us. So you think Zion's going to go there?
Commissioner, the NBA office would be aghast. It's not, this isn't football. There's power in that commissioner's spot. And the last thing the NBA wants is the idea that small markets don't have a chance. It doesn't make sense. Milwaukee's going to go to look at Milwaukee. Look at his finals. I mean, look at these conference finals. I mean, it's Golden State, who forever stunk. It's a big market, but they were bad forever. And then it's Portland, Milwaukee, Toronto. Okay? Like, this is what the NBA wants. The last thing they already have this perception that it's all, we're fixing, I love this. Can we finally get over the idea that they are fixing everything for the Knicks and the Lakers?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it didn't happen, right? New Orleans won this thing last night. New Orleans. It's probably the last pick they could have come up. Maybe Memphis would have been the last one.
I think if the NBA was ranking the teams that would most like to get Ja Morant, in theory, and Zion Williamson, I legitimately believe this. I think Memphis and New Orleans would be their two favorite, least favorite picks. I mean, out of the 30-team league, they would have picked everybody else but those two.
And honestly, if I'm New Orleans, I would just – I mean, I guess you could sit the whole year, but I just don't see that happening. You can build a contender anywhere the way it works. And one part of it is, if you're good enough, they generally are going to want to come play with you. Now, you know, New Orleans is a bit mismanaged. It didn't work out yet for Anthony Davis, but look what happens. If Rich Paul and Anthony Davis had never said anything in the offseason, and it's nice and quiet right now, you're going, hey, look at this. And New Orleans can sit there and make Anthony Davis play half a season with Zion Williamson.
Just to see how they're going to match up together, right? That was what I said opening up the show. I said, if you're Anthony Davis and you're trying to be rational here, don't you want to see how good Zion's going to be in the NBA before you demand a trade to another team? Because it might be the case that you've actually got the best scenario now. Because people forget, last year, the Pelicans were good enough to go to the playoffs, win a series. Remember, they swept, I believe I'm correct in this, didn't they sweep the Trailblazers last year? I think the Pelicans swept the Trailblazers.
Yeah, I think that was the team that beat the Trailblazers, right.
Yeah, and then they won a game against the Warriors in the second round of the playoffs. So it's not as if they were just awful. And then Anthony Davis comes out, says he wants to be traded. But to me, I'm sitting around now, if I'm Anthony Davis, and I'm being rational and not allowing my feelings to dictate everything and saying, hey, maybe this situation in New Orleans is not so bad now that I got Zion coming.
You can see what it's like. How would you play together? You're going to attract shooters. I mean, that team's going to need someone who can shoot from the perimeter. And they're going to come if you got these two guys and a point guard. And you've got Julius Randle there. I mean, you have a makings of a nice team. And you also, I think you feel it's going to be wild in New Orleans. Like, the city is going to go nuts for this.
Yeah.
And the stadium's going to be packed. And when you go on the road, there's going to be a buzz in the arena. And that's what the guys want. Right, nobody wants to sit there and be like, I'm in the NBA, but when I come to town, 8,000 people are here. We're never on TNT. We're never on ESPN. Like, they're gonna put the Pelicans on TV nonstop next year because everyone wants to watch Zion. And so you feel that energy, and you got a guy in David Griffin who built a champion in Cleveland, and you find, you find the shooters and stuff like that who are gonna line up for you. And you've got something, and now maybe you see. And then sitting there by midwinter, Anthony Davis is like, hey, this is all right. I'm staying, So we'll see. I don't think he can hold out. I don't think he will. And that would be disastrous if he would. And the NBA would go absolutely nuts because they are setting everything up the right way. We don't want tanking. Look, New Orleans gets it. We don't want the process ever again. Good. That's done. That's not going to work. And we want all of our teams with a chance to win.
I agree with you. I think the NBA made smart moves on the draft lottery. We're talking to Dan Wetzel. Follow him on Yahoo at Yahoo Sports. You can read his column every single day at Dan Wetzel. Here's the other thing I was saying, Dan. The NBA is a star-driven league. The tension follows the stars. If Zion is going to be really good, he's going to get as much attention in New Orleans as he would have elsewhere because of the way that the NBA coverage occurs, not to mention because he's already got a massive social media footprint and everything else. If I'm advising Zion this morning, and it was clear he was disappointed that he didn't go to New York or L.A. based on the way they shuttled him out of that draft arena area, I tell him, look, if you're as good as you think you are and you put in the hard work, you're going to get just as much attention in New Orleans as you would elsewhere.
Yeah, he's going to be in about 400 Nike commercials next year. He's going to get a $100 million, $80 million Nike deal. Giannis was the second highest vote getter in the All-Star game this year.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter where you play anymore. This isn't 1985 where the league had to get Patrick Ewing to the New York Knicks. That mattered back then. But that's a whole different world. And so he can do everything he wants to do in New Orleans. And Anthony Davis can sign for like $228 million to play with Zion Williamson in New Orleans. Or he can sit there and say, you know what? I got to get to L.A. or New York. Really? Have you seen those two franchises? Because neither one's made the playoffs in about half a decade. Like, what is it about New York and L.A. that makes you think there's all of a sudden competency in place? I like Scott Perry running the Knicks. I think there's something there. The Lakers are a dumpster fire. What makes you go, oh, I'm going to win there? Like, why? Why do you think they're better set up than New Orleans is? Because look at the playoffs. You can win wherever. Boston's the team. Well, you know what? Everyone's fighting. Kyrie's probably leaving. Maybe it's a little better chances in a place like Boston, but then I think just for the Pelicans, just the whole world changed last night. Even if Anthony Davis is like, I'm never playing here again, It's never happening. Sure, you can trade him, and now you get whatever picks and players you get. Send him to Boston, you get Tatum and a bunch of picks and some other guys. You already have that cornerstone. You have the replacement for Anthony Davis, possibly. It is a heck of a basketball player. We'll see if Zion's as good as Anthony Davis. But
conspiracy theory guy was out there talking about how the NBA rigs the NBA draft lottery. I've always said on the radio show years and on television before and radio, writing, everywhere else, it's crazy because if that happened, the people who rigged the NBA draft lottery would go to prison for years. That's fraud. It would be the dumbest decision that anybody could ever make. But to me, this result actually kills that forever, right? Because we just said the two teams that the NBA would have least rather preferred getting Ja Morant and Zion Williamson, it appears are going to get them. But you have been on this camp too. I mean, and maybe it's just social media insanity, but there's way too much talk about the NBA draft lottery being rigged.
NBA draft lottery, NBA officiating, NBA everything. I mean, I wrote a column once when the Pistons and the Spurs were playing in the finals going, really?
This is what the NBA is rigged to happen?
Great job. Good job, guys. They're really rigging it well. Look, the idea of a bunch of billionaire owners and a commissioner making, you know, Lord, I don't know what, but
$20 million a year fortune, probably at least.
They're putting college basketball assistants in prison for quote-unquote fraud. Okay? You think these guys are going to risk? This would be a massive fraud. This wouldn't just be a little fraud. Like, this would be like life in prison type stuff, Brad.
It would probably be the biggest fraud in our lives in American sports, right? I mean, I think pretty clearly.
$1 billion industry? Oh my goodness! And the prosecutors seeking publicity, which they always are, would be on this case. Like, this would be the greatest case ever. There's absolutely no way they rigged any of this stuff. No one else would stand for it. Nobody else, like, the conspiracy, the only way it could happen is if only one person knew about it. Because if there's two, someone's coming, it leaks out. It's just, there's absolutely no chance. But you know what? It'll never end. It's the NBA. And, you know, like, again, if the NBA officials are cheating the system and all these things and everything's rigged for the big teams, where are they? The only reason Golden State got good was because they drafted Steph Curry 7th, Klay Thompson 11th, Draymond Green the second round. All right, well, that's a heck of a conspiracy the NBA set up for them. We want Golden State to be good, so let's give them, you know, two late lottery picks and a second rounder. Yeah, I mean, come on. Sometimes you just get good.
You mentioned the fraud. You covered this case very, very well, and we've had you on to talk about it a lot. I believe it is now complete, if I'm not mistaken. You can tell me if I'm wrong. They're sending a couple of additional guys convictions, but it seemed like the jury was a lot more skeptical here. What's the end result now that this entire investigation seems to be winding its way to conclusion? Can the government be happy? Do you think they feel like they got their money's worth out of this investigation? What's the impact going to be long-term in college basketball? Do you end up with Arizona keeping Sean Miller and LSU keeping Will Wade? How does this all shake out?
If the government thinks they got their money's worth, I think there's a reason we have a $23 billion deficit or a $1 trillion or whatever the heck that thing is. National debt, because I mean, this was ridiculous. You know, they took a guy named Marty Blazer who stole $2.3 million from his clients. He's a financial player in Pittsburgh, and in an effort to avoid prison, and we'll see if he does in the end, he said, "I'll give you all these college basketball guys," and they spent 3 years undercover agents, tons of money, tons of resources, trying to get in and find these coaches bribing people. There was all sorts of misconduct by the FBI agents, so they had to kind of pull the plug on the scandal. They end up getting Christian Dawkins and Merle Code, two guys you never heard of, Jim Gatto, an Adidas, you know, middle manager, and they're going to prison. You know, four assistant coaches probably get probation. and that's and there's a suit guy in my in Atlanta. He'll probably get probation or under 6 months. Like nothing happened, literally nothing, and nobody heard any of these guys other than Chuck Person, and that wasn't because he was an assistant basketball coach at Auburn. No, you know, no head coaches. Rick Pitino got fired, but that was like a lifetime achievement award. And that's it. Nothing's changed. Zero. The entire system's still going on. People aren't talking on the phones because they're worried about getting their wire tapped. But other than that, nothing changed. Nothing got proven. It was totally a ridiculous case. You know, we'll see if the courts of appeal even uphold this concept that breaking NCAA rules is a federal felony because schools receive federal funds and you've somehow defrauded the school. So it was a total waste of time. And the crazy thing is they talked about, we're going to clean up college basketball. We're going to shine a light on this thing. The most damning evidence they had, which were wiretaps involving Will Wade, Sean Miller, some other head coaches, they didn't even play because they're trying to win. Their case was so hard to win, they had to like twist it into a pretzel and get this thing out. So the best evidence they had that could actually cause change in college basketball, the government didn't even play. So it was like, what was the entire purpose of this? Just to get, this kid, Christian Dawkins, and put him in a federal camp for 6 months? Like Jim Gatto, well, we got to get him off the streets. These guys are going to prison. Okay, like Marty Blazer, he was testifying against him. He's a guy who stole money. These guys gave people money, and they're going to prison. Like, it's so stupid. It was just a waste of time. So, I never thought it would be this bad. I was skeptical of this whole case at the beginning, but, boy, was I ever proven right on that.
This is cool you got going on. We're talking to Dan Wetzel, Yahoo Sports national columnist. Yesterday I got a couple of these books. I've already got one of my kids reading it. You were doing, when I was a kid, there was a series of like famous people biographies. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people out there listening right now, they're like kid biographies that you could get in the school library and you could read about Davy Crockett or George Washington or Martin Luther King Jr. or whoever it was. And it was written in a very accessible way for kids to read. And it seems to me, I read the first couple of chapters of these books. I've got Alex Morgan in front of me right now and Steph Curry. You've got a series of books that you're trying to get kids to read, and it's hard to get kids to read if oftentimes for parents out there. Explain to people what's out there, how they can find them, and what you're doing.
Yeah, we're taking on Fortnite.
It's
me against Fortnite.
Yes.
We'll get your kid to put down the controller for a minute, maybe. They're called Epic Athletes. The first two are Alex Morgan and Steph Curry, but there's eight of them right now coming out. We have Tom Brady, LeBron, Serena Williams, Kevin Durant, Lionel Messi, Simone Biles, all coming. But exactly what you said, that 115-page biography written in a very narrative form, very easy, like stories about the athletes, not just like a Wikipedia page in a book. Like, they have this thing called the Who Was series. If you're a parent, but those are just facts upon facts. This is about, I spent time really focusing on these guys were like at the middle school level as kids and in high school, which is basically the middle school readers, kind of the reader who should like this. It's perfect for book reports and summer reading. And, talking about what their seventh grade team was like, what they were going through at this age, how there's all sorts of inspiring things you can take out of their life and how they climbed to the top. Because you look at them now and you go, oh, Steph Curry, what do you have, 37 last night? He's unbelievable. Well, man, when he was 11, everyone said, you're too small to play. We don't even want you on our AAU team. Go play on that AAU team. Or Alex Morgan got cut from her travel soccer team. Or Serena Williams was pretty good as a kid, but who was better? Her older sister. She got no attention. It was all Venus, Venus, Venus. Well, a lot of people can relate to that with having an older sibling that gets the attention. So the books are just very narrative-based. Kids seem to like them. We've had a lot of success so far. Parents are, I had a father tell me, I was at a thing last night, and they had gotten the book early, and a dad said to me, I walk in to the living room, and my it's dead silent, and I'm like, all right, what are they doing? And I walk in, and I said, what are you doing? And my 11-year-old goes, I'm reading. He gave me the book, right? So yeah. Hopefully we're getting them to read. Boys particularly are hard to get to read, so we're hopeful this will work out. We'll give them a sports bio.
Outstanding stuff, Dan Wetzel, at Dan Wetzel on Twitter. If you want to track down those books, you can find them there. Alex Morgan, Steph Curry are out right now. Final segment coming up next on Outkick, Hour 2. We've also got Chris Mannix coming up in Hour 3 to break down more of the NBA. This is Outkick on Fox Sports Radio.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Live from the Geico Outkick Studios. Last night, the Warriors beat the crap out of the Portland Trail Blazers, even without Kevin Durant. And I think most of you who were watching this game, myself included, felt like, one, it felt anticlimactic. That's because I believe, and I told you for a while, that I thought the Rockets-Warriors was the NBA Finals. So it felt anticlimactic. The crowd didn't seem into it that much, and the Warriors just seemed like a lot better team than the Trail Blazers. Now, you can insert every caveat you want about how this is a 7-game series and you can't judge everything based on what happens in game one. But let me put it to you this way. If you are a Trailblazer fan, was there anything you saw in game one that made you think that the Trailblazers are going to win 4 of the next 6 games in order to win this series? Because that's what they have to do right now. There are 6 games remaining in theory if this goes 7 games. And the Trailblazers either have to win 4 out of 5 or they have to win 4 out of 6 in order to win this series. I think what will happen is tomorrow the Warriors will come out, they'll win game 2, and the series will effectively be over. Because it's virtually impossible to come back against the Golden State Warriors from 0-2 down, particularly when, if they need to, they can bring back Kevin Durant and be ready to roll in Game 6 and Game 7. I think the Warriors want to sit Durant out for this entire series. I think the Splash Brothers are relishing the challenge. Klay Thompson and Steph Curry. And this reminds me a little bit of how whenever Bill Belichick has an injury or has a suspension to Tom Brady, it's like he gets more excited because he gets to put together a game plan that's different to prove how good the rest of the team is. I think that's where we are right now with the Warriors. So, tonight, we'll see whether or not the Eastern Conference looks to be more competitive. The Bucks are a 6-point favorite over the Toronto Raptors. We'll see whether anything transpires there that makes us think, hey, you know what, this could be a 6 or 7-game series. But so far, what we saw last night in the actual on-court product does not bode well for the Western Conference in the NBA. I think that the Warriors are going to come out and win Game 2. And they'll be up 2-0. I think this is a 5 games or less series and that the Warriors will roll and continue to win. All right, now, couple of things that are out there that are much more significant. How about the number 1 and number 2 overall picks going to the New Orleans Pelicans and the Memphis Grizzlies, respectively? I believe we have audio of that announcement last night shortly before 9 o'clock Eastern. This is what it sounded like.
The 2nd pick will be made by the Memphis Grizzlies. And that means that the number 1 pick in the 2019 NBA draft goes to the New Orleans Pelicans.
That set off a full-fledged celebration in the New Orleans Pelicans ticket office. This is legit what it sounded like when they found out they were theoretically going to get Zion.
Grizzlies.
So Bedlam down in the Big Easy, everybody's celebrating Zion Williamson. This throws everything into an uproar with Anthony Davis. If you're Anthony Davis, don't you have to make the decision to wait and see how good Zion is now before you demand a trade to another team? Because what if Zion is the transcendent talent that many people believe he might be? He's plugged in now with the New Orleans Pelicans, theoretically, for 5 years. If you're Anthony Davis, are you so sure that by leaving you're going to end up on a better team? Remember, the year before this one, the New Orleans Pelicans went to the playoffs, they swept the Portland Trail Blazers, and they won a game against the Golden State Warriors. So if you are the Pelicans and you are trying to persuade Anthony Davis, don't you say, wait a minute, bud. Think about the talent that we have on this team right now. You got to wait and see how good Zion is. You may decide to re-up here and feel like you have a better chance of winning a championship in New Orleans with Zion for the next 5 years. Remember, Zion can't get out for the next 5 years once he signs this deal. Make a run here in New Orleans with us and see what happens. And Anthony Davis may respond to that and actually think it makes some sense. At a minimum, if you're advising Anthony Davis in an intelligent fashion, I think you have to tell him, wait and see how good Zion is. You don't need to be traded now in this offseason. If it's not working out, we can trade you before the end of the year, before the trade deadline. Or, guess what? In 9 months, you're going to be an unrestricted free agent once the season starts. 1 year from today, you can be out on the market going wherever you want. Why don't you just finish things off in New Orleans? This is an intriguing question. Now, this seems on some level to be payback to the city of New Orleans for the awful call in the NFC Championship game that cost them a berth in the Super Bowl. But, and maybe I'm just being too negative here. Maybe this is me playing the devil's advocate too much. Why didn't Zion talk to the media right after the New Orleans Hornets won the draft lottery? You saw his face. He didn't seem happy. It seems clear that he wanted to go to New York or LA. Is it possible? I'm just asking. Is it possible that Zion could do one of two things? Threaten to go back to Duke. I don't think he'll do it because the money is so significant. You want to get through your rookie contract as rapidly as you can in the NBA and get into that second deal. That's why you go pro at 19. But it's a threat. He seemed to like being at Duke. I'm sure Duke would welcome him back with open arms. Some people are like, well, he wouldn't be eligible. He hasn't done his classwork. Stop. Duke could get him eligible. Two, the NBA's never seen this on a big level. We saw it with John Elway. We saw it with Eli Manning. We saw it with Eric Lindros. What if Zion said, I'm not going to sign with the New Orleans Pelicans? I'll either go back to Duke or I'll sit out for a year and go back into the draft again. Now, the practical reality there is, I can't remember. Can you guys remember a guy who set out, actually refused to play, and went into the draft again? I can't remember this ever happening.
No, and somebody tweeted us saying that it's different from the NFL because potentially you can't just sit out a year and then come back and get redrafted because the team owns your draft rights for 3 years.
Is that right? Somebody look up that to check and see whether or not that's possible. Now, I understand 3 years if you're not going, like if you're a foreign player, for instance, you know, if you're playing overseas and you haven't come into America and you're like, hey, I'm going to play with, you know, whatever team it is overseas for a little while. But, you know, the way this works in most other sports is you're not restricted if you're an American, you know, player for multiple years. Because there have been threats before of, I'll sit out for the whole year and I'll go back through the draft again. And I know in the NFL, you don't retain draft rights for multiple years. In college baseball, in Major League Baseball draft, there's always that threat. So is it possible? I just think it's really strange that Zion hasn't spoken out yet. That to me seems to be very, very odd that they didn't do an interview with Zion. He's there at the draft lottery. If he wanted to be interviewed in any way, you would think that he would speak. And I feel like if either LA or New York, if the Lakers or the Knicks had had that number one pick, we would have heard a lot from Zion. We haven't heard a word from him yet. And I think it would be strange if he had the potential to go back to Duke that an NBA team would have his rights while he's playing for Duke. That seems very strange to me. But we'll have Chris Mannix on in the next segment who could probably break this down and even tell us whether he thinks there's any possibility of this happening in the NBA. I remember vaguely Steve Francis back in the day not being happy with where he might be being drafted. and making subtle threats about what he might be willing to do or not willing to do based on who was going to draft him. But by and large, we've seen it happen in baseball all the time. Because guys always say, well, you know, if we don't get drafted where we want, we'll go back to college. We'll not decide to come out early. You know, like whatever it is for a high school perspective. And in the NFL, this happens somewhat regularly, at least in that if you're a top number one overall pick, you can dictate in some ways where you might be willing to go. We saw it happen with Eli. We saw it happen with John Elway. And Eddie Garcia is telling us it's happened before with Eric Lindros in the world of the NHL. It's relatively rare that you even have this scenario where you have a guy who you know is going to be the number one overall pick like Zion, and somebody has the ability to be this confident about being the number one overall pick and even make a statement in this realm. I would just say that would make me a little bit nervous that he didn't say anything. That he said absolutely nothing at all after the Pelicans got the number one pick. And if you saw his face, it seemed clear he was not that happy. He wanted to go to New York or LA. Now, from a practical perspective, I really don't think this matters that much. Because I think the NBA is such a star-driven league that you will follow the NBA player more than you'll follow the NBA team. So if Zion is as transcendent of a talent as it appears he might be, I don't think he's going to make less money in his shoe contract because he's in New Orleans compared to New York or LA. Because if he's good, the talent will follow him. And I think we're about to see good evidence of that tonight when you look at what's happening with Giannis in Milwaukee. I think tonight is when Giannis starts to be the superstar striding across the global stage in a way that he never has before. But that's because his team hasn't been good enough. Giannis himself was the number two vote getter in the NBA All-Star game coming out of Milwaukee. That's because he's good. If your talent is high enough and strong enough, people will find you and they will follow you. So we will discuss this with Chris Mannix. I am fascinated by this situation, by the way that the NBA draft lottery came down. We'll also get Mannix's opinions on what he thinks about Bucks versus the Raptors, and also what he thinks about what we saw last night.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Welcome back, Geico Outkick Studios. Zion did talk for like 45 seconds right after he was, the Pelicans were named as the number one overall pick coming down on the draft lottery. Here's what it sounded like.
You looked a little nervous while you were sitting down. How do you feel right now?
Still nervous. I don't know why. I'm just still nervous. Maybe because, yeah, like you said, all eyes were on me. And I think it's a lot to take in because I don't know where I'm going to be.
Uh-huh. Well, when you saw New Orleans got the number one pick, you didn't think for a second, oh, I could be in New Orleans?
It's definitely a possibility, but, I mean, it's not sure until it actually happens.
Uh-huh. Have you ever been before?
I've never been.
Let's talk through your game and what potentially it could bring to whatever team you end up with.
It's my will to win, and whatever that team needs me to do, I'm going to be able to do it.
Mm-hmm. And we saw a guy named, Anthony Davis, be picked by New Orleans with the number one overall pick. How does your game maybe compare to his and the ability that he had to make a difference in the league?
Definitely the versatility, the ability to block shots and rebound, and I think just want to win.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, Zion wants to win. He's still a little nervous, though, guys. But he knows potentially where he could end up now that New Orleans has the number one pick.
That's Zion. We are rolling here. Chris Mannix joins us now. He was in Chicago, NBA Draft Lottery at SI. Chris Mannix is him on Twitter. Chris, what do you think Zion and his crew think today as they survey the NBA Draft Lottery landscape and realize that they potentially are headed to New Orleans?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any potentially about it at this point. I mean, I was in the lottery room, the drawing room itself last night, and Alvin Gentry, you know, made many a joke about, yeah, we're going to evaluate who to take, and then sort of just laughed it off. I mean, he's going to the New Orleans Pelicans, and I would imagine that there's a level of disappointment. I mean, this is, it just seems like everyone kind of christened the Knicks as the team that was going to get the number one pick,
that was going to get Zion. It was going to be a Patrick Ewing redux from 3 decades ago, and he was going to be the franchise player, and now he's not. And the Pelicans all of a sudden find themselves in an incredibly advantageous position because they can draft Zion and then most likely trade Anthony Davis and use that haul, which is going to be enormous, to add the pieces around him. So New Orleans went from a team that, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we didn't know what kind of position they'd be in long term, to one that has, quite frankly, a pretty rosy future down there.
All right, so we've been debating this on the show and talking about it. We've seen John Elway, we've seen Eli Manning, Eric Lindros. So far as I know, there's never been an NBA player who tried to exert control and say, I don't want to go play for this particular team. Let's pretend that Zion and his representation just are adamantly opposed to going to New Orleans. Let's pretend that that's the case. What kind of recourse do they have? What when you get the number one overall pick in the NBA, and I don't know the answer to this, how long do you retain the rights? Let's say Zion said, you know what, I'll go back and play at Duke for another year. I'm not that excited about going to this franchise. What would happen if that turned into a dramatic situation?
Well, my understanding is that they retain the rights in perpetuity. It's not like he can go back to Duke, and I think at this point he's probably taken enough money that he couldn't go back to Duke. But he would have to play for the Pelicans.
It's not like the NFL where you can say, I'll go back through the draft, or Major League Baseball, certainly.
When guys don't want to play, there have been situations where guys don't want to play for a certain team. Now, the most recent example is Kristaps Porzingis. When Porzingis was in the draft, his agent and he did not want to play for Philadelphia. And they all but threatened the Sixers with staying overseas and not doing it. And that's happened before. I mean, Fran Vasquez, if you remember that name, you know, I think it was about 15 years ago, he didn't want to play in Orlando. He stayed overseas and played there for forever. He never came over. But the Magic retained his rights all throughout. Now, guys do some things. They don't share medicals with the team, so they make the team think the guy might be hurt. But that's usually a factor, Clay, when you get guys later in the first round or in the second round. There's no recourse here. I mean, Zion Williamson is going to get drafted by the Pelicans, and he's going to have to go to the Pelicans.
All right, you just broke down Anthony Davis. Is there any way that Anthony Davis's representation says, you know what, maybe you should rescind your trade request or demand and actually see how good Zion is before you decide to make this decision to go elsewhere? Because if Zion's as transcendent as many seem to believe he could be, he's locked in for 5 years. You could be in a better situation in New Orleans than you could be the place you get traded.
I don't think so. I mean, I asked around that situation last night, you know, people around Anthony Davis, and the sense I got was that Davis still wants to be traded away. Now, David Griffin, the GM down in New Orleans, he has done a pretty good job putting on this public face that they're going to try to convince Anthony Davis to stay. But I think that's more posturing and more of a position, trying to make a deal from a position of strength. If teams think there's even a remote chance that Anthony Davis might stay there, or that the Pelicans might roll the dice and keep him without a signed contract, it makes those offers go up a little bit more. But Anthony Davis's camp still wants to get him traded to Los Angeles. That's still the goal within his inner circle. And other teams out there, including Boston and New York, are going to try to make significant bids to land him. So I think this makes it a little bit more interesting, but I just don't think it moves the needle in Davis's camp at all.
So who has the most that they can offer for Anthony Davis? Do you still think it's the Celtics?
Well, the Lakers had a really good night last night because the Lakers now have a top four pick that they can combine with those young assets to make an offer for Anthony Davis. But I say this a lot, and I sound like a broken record, but if the Celtics decide to get into the mix, they're going to be able to get a deal done because not only do they have the wealth of draft picks and only one in the lottery, and that's the 14th pick this year, but they've got future picks. They've got, you know, three first round picks in this year's draft, but their young talent trumps everybody else. I mean, if you look at the potential players that could be in the pool in a trade for Davis, Jason Tatum is still the best player of that bunch by a lot. To me, he's the only player that has real franchise player potential that could be traded. The wild card is that Boston won't make any kind of significant offer unless they know Kyrie Irving is going to stay. So there's still a lot to kind of unravel before we get to the point where Anthony Davis is going to be traded.
Do you think still that Kevin Durant's going to the Knicks? And were you not struck by at least a little bit how much Steph and Klay seem to be recruiting Durant after they won Game 6 against the Rockets?
No, not surprised at all, because you know these guys, for all the inner turmoil that we've witnessed this year, you know, beginning at the very start of the season, these guys want to build a dynasty. I mean, Klay Thompson, you know, could he go somewhere else? Maybe. But one thing Klay Thompson has always told me and others is that all I want to do is win. Like, and that's why he is willing to take on a secondary or third, even fourth role within a team when he really could be an alpha somewhere else. These guys know that Durant stays, and it's not just three championships. It's four, it's five, it's maybe six consecutive championships. And that puts you up there in pretty rare air. So they're willing to deal with any kind of drama to keep Kevin Durant around. Now, I still think that off-the-court interests are what are going to drive Durant to New York. I think we've seen him build out his brand a lot in the last couple of years, and I think he wants to continue doing that in New York. It's not unlike what LeBron James was thinking when he signed with Los Angeles. Yes, you want to keep winning, but there are other non-basketball reasons to go and do it. So I think he's leaning that way, but this is also a guy, Klay, that in the last, you know, his last go-around in free agency was very influenced by what he saw in the room. When the Celtics showed up with Tom Brady, that was impactful on him. When the Warriors showed up with all four of their key players coming off a 73-win season, that was impactful to him. And the Los Angeles Clippers are going to roll into one of those meetings with some good players. They're going to have Doc Rivers, who's probably the most impactful coach in this process. They're going to have Lawrence Frank, who's going to be incredibly prepared for this meeting. And they're going to have Steve Ballmer, who is an owner that is actually an asset to a team because of all the energy that he brings and the positivity that he brings to the room. So I think when Kevin Durant gets into these meetings, that's when teams can really start to sway his opinion.
Kawhi hits the bounce, the four bouncer to put his team into the Eastern Conference Finals. Game one is tonight. Any impact long range in terms of that shot on Kawhi's decision?
I've always believed when it comes to Kawhi Leonard, the further Toronto can advance, the better their chances are of retaining him. So, yes, the short answer there is I think it does have an impact on him. He's, and I think I've said this to you before, he's an incredibly difficult guy to read. His inner circle, I don't think, knows too much about what he's thinking. I think there's conflict within the people around him about where they would like to see him ultimately play. But the Raptors have done a great job this year in not just building out a team around Kawhi Leonard, of treating him like a franchise player, but ignoring the noise, ignoring kind of the nonsense that the Clippers were up to when they were effectively sending a representative to every single Raptors game so that they could get some FaceTime with Kawhi Leonard from the stands, from what's going on with you know, potential, them talking to potential people around him. They've done a great job of keeping it focused on them and Kawhi Leonard. And if this team gets the NBA Finals, which they've got a great chance of doing, I don't know. I mean, I just logically think it's, you know, Kawhi would have a hard time walking away from a finals team that has the potential to be a finals team for the next several years.
Okay, last night, you were in Chicago. The NBA draft lottery, far more interesting and I think impactful long range than anything we saw happen in the Western Conference Game 1 finals last night. But the Warriors just looked so much better than the Portland Trail Blazers. And I know it's only one game, and this is a seven-game series. But do you have any reason to believe that this is going to be a remotely interesting series based on what you saw last night?
I mean, Portland's guards have been so much better. And if they get hot in this next game or when the series shifts back to Portland, they can make it a series, especially if Durant remains on the sidelines. But you know, the Warriors team I saw last night was, you know, reminiscent of the Warriors teams that were pre-Durant. I mean, these guys are still very much in their prime, whether it's, you know, Steph, Clay, or Draymond. And when they get the contributions they got from some of their role players like Looney and others, they're just downright dangerous. They were stingy defensively. They were great offensively. Steph was, you know, popping shots from all over the place like he usually does. They're playing with confidence once again. So even without Durant, I think they're overwhelming favorites here. I mean, this, you know, the Blazers are one of the best stories, maybe the best story of the postseason because of what they've gone through to get to this point. Remember, they were a team that if they don't win the first round, there was a legitimate chance that they get broken up at the end of the year. Now here they are playing in the conference finals. But talent-wise, I think they're just overmatched, as everybody is when they play Golden State.
What do you expect to see tonight between the Bucks and the Raptors?
Yeah, you know, it really is a coin flip type of series for me because it's totally different from what these two teams experienced previously. I mean, in Toronto, Milwaukee's going to face a team that, you know, derives their strength from their wing players. I mean, Kawhi and Siakam are the engines that drive the Raptors on that team. Kyle Lowry is important, obviously, but you know, it's the Siakam and Kawhi. And on the flip side of it, Toronto just played a team that could not make a three-pointer if their life depended on it. Now they're going up against a team in Milwaukee that lives and dies beyond the three-point line. So it's a complete contrast of styles from what we saw in the previous game. I just think, look, it's Kawhi versus Giannis. I think they're going to match up with each other a lot in this series, and it may come down to whichever one controls the other better. I mean, both these guys are elite offensive players. Both these guys are elite defensive players. Giannis might be defensive player of the year this year, in addition to being MVP, and we know what Kawhi is capable of when he gets locked in on a postseason game. I think this has the potential to be one of the great one-on-one matchups that we've seen in recent NBA playoff memory, because these two guys are in their prime, and they're going to be going up against each other, I think, regularly.
Were you in the room watching the ping pong balls?
I was. It's quite the experience, I'll tell you.
All right, so take me into that room. Last question is kind of for people out there who are curious about how the draft lottery works. How many people are in that room? How many people are involved? I'm utterly fascinated by it.
Well, you've got representatives from 15 teams, 15 instead of 14 because the Celtics and Sixers were one of them was going to get the Sacramento pick, so they were in the room. There are 12 members of the media there to watch it. It's all filmed by the NBA because, look, they're understandably paranoid about, you know, the social media proclamations that it's rigged. If the Knicks, I mean, it's not because of the Knicks, but if the Knicks got the number one pick and no one was there to watch it, we'd hear frozen envelope 2.0 when it comes to New York. And look, they go through painstaking measures to make sure this is on the up and up with, you know, they have when they draw the ping pong balls out and there are four combinations drawn each time as they make picks 1 through 4, there's a guy in the back of the room with his back literally to the machine watching a clock at 20 seconds and announcing when the next ball can be drawn. So there's almost no way they could be any more on the straight and narrow off of this. And it's fun because you're in there, and I'm sitting a few feet away from Alvin Gentry of the Pelicans, and the Pelicans had a 6% chance of landing that number one pick. And as soon as they do, Gentry just gets up and starts screaming in very colorful language, I would say, as well, because he knows what this means to that franchise. And, you know, it's just the lottery has its own drama, but this is, you know, for a writer anyway, it's a more entertaining story to be behind closed doors where other people are not.
Now, they take your cell phones. Like, you have no ability to communicate anything from in that room. I guess you get quarantined, basically, until they announce it?
Yeah, they take cell phones, Apple Watches, any form of technology. They wand you up and down like you're going into the White House. I mean, it really is like the highest level of security that I've ever gone through because you have to do multiple levels of it. And look, they understandably don't want word to leak out of there. So after they do the lottery drawing itself, you literally have to wait over an hour until the actual drawing is done on TV. And they warn you too, like, you know, if you got to go to the bathroom, in so many words, be ready to go pee in the corner because you're not getting out of that room to go to the bathroom under any circumstances.
Hey, outstanding stuff as always, Chris. Appreciate you coming on with us, and hopefully we'll talk to you next week.
You got it, Clay.
That's Chris Mannix at SI Chris Mannix. I'm Clay Travis. When we return, breakdown impact as we get ready for Bucks going up against the Raptors, what we learned last night, and one more dive into the NBA draft lottery. This is Outkick the Coverage on Fox Sports Radio.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Welcome back, Geico Outkick Studios. We are off and rolling here. Appreciate everybody hanging out with us here on the Wednesday edition, Outkick the Coverage, the NBA Draft Lottery edition. I feel like we got so much more information coming out of the NBA Draft Lottery than we did out of Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals. Now, to me, the storyline of the NBA rigging, you just heard, it was fun. Chris Mannix was in the room when the ping pong balls are coming up. But the story of the NBA rigging the draft lottery has to effectively die now. I also want to give the NBA props because the teams that decided to tank no longer got the benefit. The idea of what the Sixers did, trust the process, all of that in terms of being an advantage that you stink so that you can get top draft picks, it's all died. Because 14% was the best chance that any one team was going to be able to get the number one overall pick. And the top teams, really, in terms of awfulness, the teams that tanked the most, the Knicks, the Cavs, and the Phoenix Suns, none of them got the number one overall pick. The Chicago Bulls were not rewarded either. And the end result is two teams that were trying to win, at least on some level, the Pelicans and the Memphis Grizzlies end up getting the number one and number two overall picks. The expectation, Zion to New Orleans and Ja Morant to Memphis. And if you are arguing that the NBA has been rigging anything, this is probably the last two teams that Adam Silver would have picked if he could decide where Zion and Ja Morant were going to go, because I believe that Memphis and New Orleans are probably the two least valuable franchises in the entirety of the NBA at this point in time. So the odds of both those teams, two of the 30 least valuable franchises winning the draft lottery, very low. That is going to be fascinating to see how it all plays out. And again, we've been discussing the fact that Zion didn't look very happy with New Orleans getting him. Is there the possibility, however remote it may be, that he could go Eli, that he could go Elway, that he could go Lindros, and put pressure on the Pelicans and say, I don't want to play here? Just keep that in mind. That interview that he did, 45 seconds with ESPN right after, he didn't even say, hey, I'm definitely going to New Orleans. He didn't seem like he was that geeked about that idea. So I would just put it out there as a possibility that Zion's crew could make it a little bit difficult on New Orleans. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he's going to come out later today and say, hey, I went to New Orleans. I've never been more excited about it. He said he's never been there before. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he's going to end up embracing it in a big way. But that initial reaction when you saw New York, L.A., Memphis, and New Orleans as the final four, he didn't seem very excited. So we'll see what the drama is associated with that. In actual basketball news, the Portland Trailblazers looked done. They couldn't cover Steph Curry. I don't remember Steph Curry getting that many open looks from three in any game during the Houston Rockets series. I don't even remember him getting that many open looks in any multiple games combined in that series against the Houston Rockets. I think that the Pelicans are in good shape. I think that the Trailblazers are in really rough shape here. And as much as I wanted this to be a good series and as much fun as Lillard and McCollum have been, they looked overmatched even without Kevin Durant on the floor. This looks like a five-game series. Can the Eastern Conference end up being more competitive? We'll see tonight. I like the Bucks. They're six-point favorites. I think what you saw from the Trailblazers was a mentally and physically exhausted team coming off of a Game 7 win. I think you're going to see the same thing from the Raptors as they get prepared to go up against the Bucks. Plus, the Bucks know, based on how they performed in Game 1 against the Boston Celtics, that they've got to bring their A game. They are 8-1, 8-1 against the spread so far in the playoffs as well. They have been dominant, and I think they go out and win by double digits over the Raptors in Game 1. But we will see what happens with the Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals going on tonight on TNT. Can't wait to watch that one. We'll be back tomorrow breaking down everything. Great show today. My thanks to John Campbell, to Dan Wetzel, and to Chris Mannix. I encourage you to go download the podcast, search out Outkick, search out my name, Clay Travis. You'll be able to make sure that you don't miss anything at all. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us. Thanks for spending your Wednesday morning. Congratulations to New Orleans, finally getting a little bit of redemption over that awful call against the Saints. Now, theoretically, you get Zion served up on a silver platter. Big time win for the Big Easy, which is a phenomenal city, and I would love to see them be good at basketball and be able to build around Zion. Congrats to Memphis as well. Ja Morant, going to be a lot of fun. I think it's going to be intriguing to watch him as well. This is OutKick on Fox Sports Radio.